Hello, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned in to my weekly Wellness Update podcast, bringing you the health news and views that you can actually use. Of course, my goal is to interpret the news for you to help you understand what it means and to pick out of the sea of information different studies and findings that I consider important to one's health. In particular, I'm looking at ways in which nutrition and the use of dietary supplements can boost your health, your longevity, your well-being, and just your overall quality of feeling good. So there's a lot to learn, a lot to understand. First study I want to touch on this week relates to coenzyme Q10. And in this study, 200 milligrams of CoQ10 were given per day to diabetic patients, and it was found that their circulation improved. The endothelial lining within them, which of course is under considerable stress from the extra blood sugar, by that I mean the higher levels of blood sugar have a caramelizing or cementing-like effect on flexible structures, and this certainly would include the elasticity of the circulatory system. So to find that a nutrient can not only help with their cardiovascular health, but is, you know, the same nutrient is known to help prevent side effects of statins. In other words, statins are anti-energy by definition, and CoQ10 is a vital energy-producing substance. Statins lower CoQ10 levels and thereby are fatigue-generating. That's part of the reason for their fatigue. So taking CoQ10 with a statin is common sense. Everyone who has gotten into the statin routine should be on them. Of course, I'm not a statin fan, as most of you know, but nevertheless, there's a lot of people who are doing this because their doctors have put them on it. So it's vital to take coenzyme Q10 with it just to offset many of the side effects of statins, which deplete CoQ10. But here we see an additional benefit in a diabetic population, which is a tough situation, and improvement in circulation. That's really rather significant. A big headline here for CoQ10. Definitely something anyone on a statin would want to use. Of course, I consider coenzyme Q10 one of the great anti-aging nutrients and good for anybody who's getting older and just doesn't want to get any older any faster than they have to. Vitamin D reduces bacterial infections during pregnancy. Another interesting study. And what was found here, we know, for example, that vitamin D is sort of a wonder nutrient. We've been getting a lot less of it as a population because of the warnings from the American Cancer Society to stay out of the sun. Not a good idea for most people. You need sun, you need sunlight, you need vitamin D. Vitamin D is turning out to be a major anti-cancer nutrient. So for we'd have to even reevaluate the benefits for skin-related problems compared to all the other cancers that are caused by a lack of vitamin D. This is something that a lot of people have to start taking into consideration. You just do not want low levels of vitamin D. In this particular study, we are looking at pregnancy and pregnancy complications. And it was found that women who have the highest levels of vitamin D were much less likely to get bacteria vaginal infections. So vitamin D is just critically important to the healthy function of the frontline defense system. This is important during pregnancy because during pregnancy, a woman's immune system is downregulated intentionally so that her immune system does not reject the baby. And so during pregnancy, it is quite possible that infections, bacterial, fungal, whatever, can flare up and cause more problems than they otherwise would at another time. Here we see that vitamin D is part of the answer to this problem, meaning it doesn't boost up excessively the immune system. In fact, if anything, it would help to dampen an excessive immune response. In that way, it would also help do what mom is wanting to do, which is not reject the child. But at the same time, it has a significant effect on maintaining the integrity of the mucosal lining immune defense system, specifically much less vaginal infection. And of course, that's great because when the baby's born, comes through the vaginal canal, you do not want an overgrowth of the wrong thing colonizing baby as its first immune lesson. this tends to set the stage for problems. So vitamin D adequacy during pregnancy, just as important as iron and folic acid, iodine, and many of the other nutrients that are so critical to having a healthy child. All right, mangosteen reduces fat cell inflammation and insulin resistance. Well, mangosteen, as many of you probably know, has been a nutrient which has been widely marketed through network marketing companies as the cure-all for everything on earth, which it isn't. But mangosteen is a very nice antioxidant. It's in the antioxidant family. I like mangosteen as a supplement. I think there's a lot of excellent natural sources of antioxidants. Mangosteen is somewhat unique, and that is a xanthone. It's a specific kind of an antioxidant. It's what's called prenylated, which gives it this ability to attach to the inside of cell membranes, much like the tocotrienol form of vitamin E. At any rate, this was a cell study, so it wasn't a human study, but it's important because it's starting to show some of the science behind mangosteen. Mangosteen doesn't have a ton of science behind it. It's not like the blueberry that's got reams of science, but it is starting to develop some science, and this particular science was quite interesting from my perspective, because it was able to show in a cell study that it could regulate key gene signals, especially the NF-kappa-B gene signal that sits central to the inflammatory process. It was able to modulate that and thus reduce inflammation. At the same time, it was able to specifically affect fat cell inflammation. This was what they were testing, was the effect on fat cells. And it was able to stabilize the level of the fat hormone adiponectin, which is critical to maintaining insulin working correctly in your liver. So adiponectin levels will be the be-all and end-all to combating insulin resistance. And here we see, granted, it's a cell study, so it hasn't been replicated yet in humans, but it's predictive of information that mangosteen itself will have not just antioxidant properties, but gene signal regulating properties that are favorable for overall inflammation and fat cell health, which, of course, is central to what's going on in weight gain and obesity-related problems. So mangosteen, helpful tool in the fight against extra weight and just helping to correct that in your body. Not a bad option to plug into an overall program of good health and well-being. Well, if high fructose corn syrup doesn't get removed from the food supply sometime, I will, of course, be disappointed. I don't know of any one substance that can be sold that is so obviously dangerous. And you got to hand it to these companies that use it, because they know full well that when you put high fructose corn syrup, which is addictive in nature because of the sugar stimulating effect it has on nerve stimulus, and then you combine it with neurostimulant flavorings, so you have, you know, Coke and Pepsi and all these people who know absolutely that when you put the high fructose corn syrup with chemical flavors, and then they both act as stimulants in the brain, that you create addictions to branded flavors. And then, of course, they spend gazillions of dollars defending that these things are just fine for your health and that it's something else that's causing the problem, and on and on. Then you've got the American Medical Association out there condoning high fructose corn syrup, even though there are reams of data showing that high fructose corn syrup is not the same as other sugar. It metabolizes differently. It fools your body. It makes you eat more food. It makes you eat more food at other meals. It makes you crave food. It actually makes you stupid. I mean, I've done many posts on this subject. And here we have a new study that shows that if you are a child of a type 2 diabetic parent, then even if you're completely healthy and you drink beverages with high fructose corn syrup, you're going to start to elevate your cholesterol. You're going to create insulin resistance, much more so than somebody who doesn't have a type 2 diabetic parent. So essentially, If your genes aren't good and you're abusing yourself with high fructose corn syrup, you have even less tolerance for it than somebody who hasn't yet been compromised. And you have to be much more careful about it, even if you yourself are at the current present time healthy. High fructose corn syrup, a fast path to disease for just about everyone. I would avoid it like the plague. It is not worth consuming. Realize that if you love some beverage that has it in it, you are simply addicted to the branded flavor stimulants, and some company has you like a Pavlovian dog, and you ought to do something about it, because there is no reason for you to go through life eating stimulus response and aging and damaging your metabolism so that some ridiculous purveyor of junk food can be profiting while you lose your health. Multivitamins extend telomere length and therefore lifespan potential. This study of 586 women has shown for the first time that a regular multivitamin intake extended telomere length by 5%. Well, what are telomeres? Telomeres are located at the end of your chromosomes, and they protect it. They protect your chromosomes from destruction as your cells split and divide. You lop off the ends of your telomeres, and as your cells reach their potential lifespan, as the telomeres keep getting shorter and shorter, eventually your cells cannot replicate anymore, and thus we have what has come to be known the Hayflick limit, or the number of times your cells can split and divide before they simply cannot maintain this process anymore, which for your overall body, theoretically, gives you a lifespan of 120 years. Now, your telomere can be shortened by oxidative stress, chemical exposures, inflammation, wear and tear. These are all factors that can speed up this process adversely. And what the researchers found was simply that taking a basic multiple vitamin compared to not taking one offered clear telomere advantage. That's a dramatic anti-aging benefit simply from a multiple vitamin. Researchers also found that vitamin C and vitamin E extended telomere length. So adding antioxidants also is protective. But we are talking about basic nutrients that protect your basic chromosomes, basic, you know, genetic replicating material from damage that would otherwise accelerate the aging process. That's pretty clear evidence that just a great multiple vitamin is the foundation for your supplement plan. Of course, I love the Daily Energy multiple vitamin. I think most of you probably know that, but that is a vitamin formulated with all coenzyme B vitamins, biologically active B12, folic acid, all the B vitamins. Instant energy for your health. All right, what is next on the list here? We go to a study on dairy products supporting healthy blood pressure. And this always interests me because, you know, there is the anti-dairy faction of the alternative health community who has assumed that dairy products are evil, 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 and should be avoided for health reasons. I'm a believer in the quality of food supply. I think there are different qualities of dairy products, certainly. And therefore, you know, I'm not really against any one food group except maybe soy, which I really don't care for unless you are of Asian descent and genetically acclimated to consuming soy products. I think they're pretty darn weird. You certainly wouldn't want to be feeding a young boy a lot of soy protein unless you'd like to make him into a young girl. And if you are a young girl, you don't want a bunch of soy protein unless you want to accelerate your rate of puberty onset or who knows what. I mean, there's just as much data that soy produces female problems as solves them because it confuses the heck out of your estrogenic systems. And if you are not acclimated from many years, thousands of years of eating this stuff, your body doesn't really know what to do with it. So unless you are of Asian descent, your chance of metabolizing a lot of soy well, especially soy that's not prepared in a traditional manner, is quite remote. But anyway, we have this ongoing, you know, community that seems to not like dairy products. I don't understand that exactly, why that is the case, other than the quality issue. Dairy is a wonderful food group. It has there's many biologically active components in milk and milk products, which are extremely helpful to the immune system and a very good source of different kinds of nutrients, including calcium. And the simple fact of it is that the studies, when you just look at milk and milk products, and this study showed a patient population of 2,245 participants, age 55 at the start, and they did not have any blood pressure problems when they started the study. And it was found that over a 6-year period, those with the higher intake of milk and milk products had a 20% risk reduction for developing high blood pressure, meaning that the dairy products were, in fact, quite helpful to their cardiovascular health, which, of course, runs counter to the wisdom of the Western medical paradigm. And this isn't the only study that's been out like this. There was an earlier study a few years back that showed intake of dairy to be inversely proportional to heart disease, very similar in its findings. That's interesting in and of itself. So dairy in moderation as part of a healthy diet, especially for higher quality dairy products, is not a problem. All right, the next study we're taking up here has to do with vitamin E offsetting age-related impaired immunity. Wow. Now, this is an animal study, and it's looking at the simple fact that aged immune cells behave differently than new immune cells or younger immune cells, and they are not as efficient in what they do. This study showed conclusively that vitamin E corrected the age-associated decline in immune system communication so that the old immune cells behaved with the same integrity and capacity as the young immune cells. This observation and cell study is interesting because it is looking at specific genetic gene advanced chemistry, but it is very consistent with a large body of information on vitamin E that shows that vitamin E intake is absolutely vital for healthy immunity in older people. And yet you have the American Heart Association attacking vitamin E, getting doctors to tell their older patients they shouldn't take vitamin E, which is completely and totally bogus. It is nothing but propaganda for the statin-producing machine. And this wouldn't be so disturbing, except it comes to light now, of course, with the swine flu lurking in the wings and certainly going to be on the radar screen this coming flu season, and will probably even continue on the radar screen through the summer, but will most likely become a more major issue when the actual flu season starts up again, and to see if it enters into the mix of this problem or not. But common sense would tell us that our older Americans who would be more at risk for a problem would want to have the healthiest possible immune system they could. Taking vitamin E would be a no-brainer for this because it is critically important to healthy immune function. And so that is the message, and all older Americans should be taking vitamin E. Of course, I recommend the tocotrienol form of vitamin E because it is superior. Alpha-tocotrienol is 60 times as potent an antioxidant as alpha tocopherol, the basic form of vitamin E. So it is a significant improvement. But vitamin E, period, is something that all older people should be taking and not listening to the propaganda, the absolute bogus propaganda that has been put out by the medical profession in an effort to boost sales of statin drugs. seeing vitamin E as competition. It's not just about that issue. It's about immunity, and that's a good point. I also might point out that statins are immune suppressant. So not only do we have them telling them to take statins and not vitamin E, but the statins themselves are going to depress immunity in a lot of people. So you've got them taking away the vitamin that helps, putting in a drug that worsens immunity, and we unfortunately will see who is going to have the problem if a nasty flu comes around. Okay, it's time now to move along to the questions and answers for the week. Of course, I take your questions, and feel free to send them to me. If you have a question you'd like me to answer on any health topic, please keep it fairly short and email it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The first question of the week comes from Carrie, who asks, what is the difference between digestive enzymes and systemic enzymes? Well, your pancreas, Carrie, makes a lot of enzymes that digest different kinds of food. These are made in your pancreas, secreted into your digestive tract. You have protease enzymes that digest proteins. You have amylase enzymes that digest carbohydrates. You have lipase enzymes that digest fats. So you have a lot of different kinds of digestive enzymes for different types of food. The systemic enzymes that your body makes are in the protease category. They are also made by your pancreas, and they can be released into the general circulation. Your body actually uses these to clean things up. They are Roto-Rooter, plumbing removal of gunk. They take down undesirable structures. In other words, when you cut yourself or injure yourself, you will develop scar tissue or scar scaffolding. In other words, if your body has to connect things back together again, you first connect, you build scaffolding, and then you patch it up, and then you take it down. And so enzymes, the protease enzymes that you make, will carry out that purpose of cleaning up the repair process and the repair job. And so this is kind of what is meant by systemic enzymes. These are enzymes that work around your body. Now, it's quite interesting that when you take digestive enzymes, you may absorb some of them systemically, and they might work that way for you. In fact, there are a lot of people who take our plant-based digestive enzymes in between meals for pain reduction or for inflammation purposes, because they basically, if they're absorbed, they will work then systemically. Of course, bromelain and papain are two of the most popular protease enzymes. And these are sulfur-containing enzymes that are very good at cleaning things up in your body. So Repair Plus would be an example of a product like that. Of course, you have problems, say, like Candida albicans. These kinds of fungus will release what are called acid proteases, which actually break down body tissues and weaken your body structure. So a lot of infections have their own enzymes, but they are antibody. So they go against your body and try to weaken it, try to break it down, try to use your body's structural components for their own purposes. That's kind of the war. You have the enemy's enzymes, and then you have your own enzymes. You make these enzymes throughout life. Your ability to make them requires energy and, you know, the ability to keep generating them at a higher level, which is why taking supplemental enzymes, especially as you get older, or as you use something a lot, so if you're a young athlete who's doing repetitive strain type activities on some system in your body, supplemental enzymes are incredibly helpful for the recovery from wear and tear. So there's not a lot of difference, actually, between digestive enzymes and systemic enzymes. It's just where they end up going in your body and what they end up doing, especially the protease ones, but their general function is cleaning things up. All right, Jill says, I have most of the symptoms of adrenal fatigue and low thyroid. How do I know which is really the problem? Well, Jill, that is a pretty good question. A lot of people are in the same boat. In other words, if they pick up a book on adrenals, they see they have every symptom. And if they pick up a book on thyroid, they see they have every symptom of that. So what is the difference? Where do you know what your problem is? Well, normally when I'm talking to people, and I talk to people all the time who have both sets of symptoms, you want to find out what changed. When was it what happened? What was the health turning point? That usually tells you your point of entry. The adrenal glands are like oil in the car engine. The thyroid is setting the pace at how fast it can go. So, you know, it's kind of like the ability to step on the gas pedal compared to the oil. You need both. So very commonly, you'll have both sets of symptoms. Adrenal problems tend to be more dominant in the morning. You just can't get up. You can't get going. You can't do aerobic exercise. You get dizzy when you stand up. You're more prone to being hypoglycemic if you don't get food. You need protein at breakfast or you really feel crummy. Nutrients like the B vitamins, pantothene, CoQ10 tend to really help the adrenals. For women, the Female Plus product is based on helping the adrenals. That's why it works. Low thyroid, especially sluggish in the afternoon power outages. If you sit down in a chair, you just conk out because your idling speed just goes off. Tend to be cold and sluggish and tired, but especially the afternoon heavy-headed lethargy. And so that's a little bit of difference there. So sometimes, depending on when your symptoms is, morning is more adrenals, afternoon is more thyroid. That would give you a little clue maybe as to which one is worse. And you can focus on either adrenal or thyroid support. But a lot of times you have to kind of work on both while you are correcting whatever changed in your health, whatever that topic is. So a lot of times it was infection, accident, injury, pregnancy. There could have been a lot of different things, and you may need to fix something so that the stress is taken off your metabolism and then it stops draining your adrenals and your thyroid. Jim says, when I exercise, my hands go numb. Do you know what could be causing that? Yes, I do, Jim. When you exercise, you move your lymphatic system more. The more intense your aerobics, the faster the pace. In other words, intense aerobics, you'll move your lymph system about 20 times the flow of normal resting. As you're moving it, if you have a lot of trash in it, it will build up pressure in your shoulders, which will push on the nerves that go to your hands and cause your hands to go numb while exercising. That's what that is. Nutrients like Immune Plus, which helps wake up the macrophages in your lymph system if you take that before you exercise, or Repair Plus, which helps to clean out. Those are the enzymes that help to clean trash out of your circulation, will help your body clean better while you're exercising, and then you won't have that problem. And, of course, when your baseline lymph and detox systems are better, you won't have that problem either. Ellen says, my son, 39, believes he developed skin problem after the flu shot last fall or winter. He got patches of tiny blisters, which burst if scratched. Skin forms scabs and flakes off. If the condition is going to go away, it does so after it flakes. The patches on the back of his hands and fingers, upper arm, back of legs, lower back. Condition seems somewhat improved now, but he's had it quite some time. Well, you know, the flu shot itself is inflammatory by nature. And many times when we're giving these oddball strains of viruses, we're actually end up giving low levels of infection or low-grade levels of inflammation. And it can easily trigger an inflammatory problem, which will manifest differently for different people. It is not at all uncommon because the flu has chicken myelin protein. In other words, the flu virus is grown in chicken eggs. You've probably noticed that if you ever watch any of these shows on where these flu shots come from. And when you have a flu that's being grown in a chicken egg, the flu virus and the adjuvant, which is the intentional inflammatory irritant that magnifies the immune reaction, all of that is combined with chicken myelin protein, which basically is a recipe for attracting whatever the flu virus they're using in with an inflammatory compound directly into your nervous system, because the myelin protein of the chicken, being grown in an evolving chicken egg is just bizarre in and of itself. But there is a cross-reactivity with these things into your nervous system. Your nerves then can irritate your skin. You can actually get the virus in your nervous system, which could come out through your nerves into your skin. Even if that wasn't happening, you could easily have what's called an IgE-mediated immune reaction based on the irritant of it all, dumping out the end of your nerves into your skin, causing this kind of rashing. I would suggest nutrients like quercetin that help to lower the histamine release in the skin and in the nerve endings. I would suggest Daily Balancer, which helps to clear out the toxins more efficiently and also helps to calm inflammation in the nerves. And I would suggest squalene as the ideal skin healing compound to actually help get the skin over the problem. That combination will usually take care of it. Because it's been going on a while, it will probably be a little slow to get rid of, but nevertheless, using that approach will typically take care of these oddball skin problems that are nerve-related. Ellen? Frank says, my LDL cholesterol is 130 and my doctor wants it under 100. I tried a statin, but I feel tired. Is there a natural way to lower my cholesterol score? I've never had a heart problem, but they run in my family. I'm 51 and in good health. Well, this is a very interesting question, Frank. I mean, an LDL of 130 is actually normal. So what your doctor is suggesting is that you have an abnormally low cholesterol level for his perception of health. I must point out to you that for primary prevention, which you are in that category, there is no evidence anywhere to suggest that such a cholesterol score is of any benefit to you. And so I really wouldn't worry about it. It sounds like you're pretty healthy right now. You can always use nutrients like pantothene and daily super E to naturally support your exercise and your cholesterol fitness. These are things, they don't lower cholesterol inappropriately. They just help cholesterol move around properly in your body. You can always use that. Which is, you know, what I would do in your situation. But I wouldn't worry about that number. Creating abnormal numbers for the statistical benefit of drug sales is a bizarre public health policy that's costing our society billions in inappropriate health care costs every year and needs to be stopped. And so unless you have a real reason and real numbers that really warrant something, you got to understand that these recommendations for abnormally low LDL cholesterol were created by a quote-unquote panel of experts, where six of the nine experts on the panel had ties to the makers of the statin drugs. And that, of course, is why they came out with these ridiculous recommendations. And statins, of course, are anti-energy, so it's not at all, you know, that you all uncommon that you'd be tired. And then you have to ask yourself the million-dollar question. How can anything that is anti-energy possibly be good for health? And so when you're playing that into a risk-benefit calculation, it's a very tough sell if you're actually objective about it. I mean, energy is the backbone of life, and you need energy to do anything and everything. And energy is what every system in your body needs to function normally. So you take something that's anti-energy to quote-unquote be healthier, yet there's no proof of that. So my suggestion is your cholesterol, LDL 130, that's totally normal. I wouldn't worry about it, Frank. Get a second opinion, which I guess I just gave you, except I'm not a doctor, so you better find another doctor. find a doctor to give you a normal opinion. It's hard to do these days. All right, Gene says, I like dairy products and I am normal body weight. Should I eat low fat or no fat? I prefer whole milk. Is that bad? Well, Gene, when you eat dairy products, if you're going to have higher fat dairy products, I don't have any problem with that at all, as long as you're not overeating calories. So the data that shows that high fat dairy products are harmful to your health, there really isn't any such data unless it's combined with high sugar, high junk food, high junky meat products. You know, in other words, if you're eating poorly, if you're picking out on junk food and you're eating a lot of high fat dairy products, it just plays into the overall problem of too many calories, too much of the wrong stuff. This low fat is good for you stuff. You know, you can go low fat to a point you have no energy, and that's not good for you either. So I don't mind if you have 2% fat as a normal type of fat. And if you like whole milk and you have higher fat, you just have to eat less other calories. You don't have to worry about milk fat. You have to worry about too many calories. So it's not that, you know, for a lot of people, it's that they need to eat low fat dairy to not have too many calories based on everything else they're eating. There is no problem with the fat percent of dairy products. They taste better when they have more fat in them, and they actually make you feel more satisfied on less food. So many people can eat less of other food when they have a little bit more fat in what they're eating. And you just have to watch this for yourself and see how that plays out. Last question of the day comes from Kim. who says, my 7-year-old son wets the bed several times a week. Do you have any tips? Kim, my number one tip for bed wetting is coral calcium. It has worked 9 times out of 10 for just about every youngster I have tried it on. A quarter teaspoon of coral calcium at dinner time, sometimes a quarter teaspoon at bed, a little extra. You don't want to give them too much water before bed, but a lot of times you just mix it up in a little bit of water, have them drink it. It relaxes their nerves calm down. It trains their nerves not to hyperreact. They start getting a training process that's normal. They start to build up their confidence, and the problem goes away. Coral calcium has helped many a youngster with that issue. All right, once again, if you have a question, please email me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com, and I'll be back next week with more news and your questions. Have a great and healthy week.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated, copyright 2008, all rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.